Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Pope Benedict begins his first apostolic pilgrimage to the African continent with a visit to Cameroon. We'll hear some of the expectations for this visit and how the Catholic Church is responding to some of the emerging challenges of the modern day. And we look ahead to the Pope's next pilgrimage to the Holy Land. We continue our series of Lenten reflections on the biblical sites related to the life of Jesus. Benedict XVI arrived in Yaoundé, Cameroon, Tuesday, bearing a message of peace, justice, and reconciliation for the African continent. This, the Pope's first apostolic visit to Africa, will also take him to Angola before he returns to Rome March 23rd. Well, before setting out for Africa, the Pope said he is keeping in mind the victims of hunger, disease, injustice, fratricidal conflicts, and every form of violence which unfortunately continue to afflict adults and children without sparing missionaries and volunteers working on the continent. In his arrival discourse to President Paul Biya and civil, diplomatic, and religious authorities on hand to greet him at Yaoundé's Nismalin Airport, Pope Benedict described his pilgrimage as that of a pastor who had come to confirm his brothers and sisters in the faith. He cited the witness of many saints from the African continent in the very first centuries of Christianity. The saints, the Pope said, who have guaranteed a distinguished place for Africa in the annals of church history. Right up to the present day, the Pope said, waves of missionaries and martyrs have continued to bear witness to Christ throughout Africa, and today the church is blessed with almost 150 million members. Pope Benedict told authorities that during his visit, he will present the working document of the Special Synod for Africa in Rome this October, whose theme is the Church in Africa in the Service to Reconciliation, Justice, and Peace. He invited all religious and lay faithful on the continent to rededicate themselves to the mission of the Church to bring hope to the hearts of the people of Africa, and indeed to people throughout the world. A Christian, he said, can never remain silent in the face of suffering or violence, poverty or hunger, corruption or abuse of power. The saving message of the gospel needs to be proclaimed so that the light of Christ can shine into the darkness of people's lives. Countless people the world over, the Pope noted, long to hear words of hope and comfort. And in Africa, where regional conflicts have left thousands homeless, widowed, and orphaned, this need for hope is ever present. Where Africans were once cruelly stolen from their lands and traded as slaves, now human trafficking, he said, has become a new form of slavery. Africa suffers disproportionately, he warned, at a time of global food shortages, financial turmoil, and climate change. So many Africans, he lamented, are falling prey to hunger, poverty, and disease. By offering the righteousness, peace, and joy of God's kingdom, the Pope suggested, the Church can encourage them in their search for justice, reconciliation, and peace. The Church in Cameroon, Pope Benedict said, carries forward this mission of healing and reconciliation through its work in education and in health centers for the treatment of victims of AIDS and HIV. He called Cameroon a land of hope for many in Central Africa, which has given refuge to thousands of refugees from war-torn countries in the region. He also described it as a land of life, with a government that speaks out in defense of the rights of the unborn. And, he said, it is a land of peace. By resolving through dialogue the dispute of the Bakassi Peninsula, Cameroon and Nigeria, he said, have shown the world that patient diplomacy can bear fruit. Catholics represent some 20% of people across Africa, a figure that's slightly higher in Cameroon, where 26% of the some 18 million inhabitants are Catholic. There are also similar numbers of traditional faiths and Muslims, while Protestants number about 17% of the population. Among Cameroonians of almost all faiths, there have been high expectations and much enthusiasm ahead of the Pope's visit. Vatican Radio's Festus Tarawali is in Yaoundé with the Pope. He filed this report.
The whole of Cameroon is mobilized and expectations are high for this visit. There is also a great feeling of affection towards the Holy Father among the people of Cameroon for having chosen this country for his first trip to Africa. Welcome to Cameroon, Pope Benedict XVI. You are a great source of inspiration for humanity, read many banners in and around Yaoundé. The visit is also the favorite topic of conversation among the young and old, the rich and poor, Catholics and non-Catholics alike. TV and radio stations are all airing documentaries on the life of Pope Benedict XVI and other events related to the apostolic visit. In many African cultures, one puts his or her house in order when expecting a very important visitor. In that line, Yaoundé has been given a facelift, streets have been tidied, and 24-hour electricity has been restored. Security has also been strengthened. Finishing touches have also been put to the sites of the visit, including the Amadou Ahidjo Stadium, the Minor Basilica at Mvolye, and the Cardinal Léger Center. The weather has also been described as favorable, with temperatures expected to be around 30 degrees Celsius. Various paraphernalia for the visit are now on sale. For a few thousand CFA francs, the local currency, one can buy a Pope Benedict baseball hat, a Vatican Cameroonian flag, and a stole. There is also a celebrative cloth for the papal visit, or pain du pape in French, which many plan to wear during the Pope's stay in Cameroon. The commemorative cloth, commissioned by the Archdiocese of Yaoundé, in some ways expresses the expectation of many people I have spoken to. That is, they expect a message of peace, reconciliation, and justice from this visit. In Yaoundé, Cameroon, I am Festus Tarawali.
Well, Festus reports that Cameroon media has been gearing up to offer the fullest coverage of the papal visit. He spoke to journalist Jude Abanseka from Radio Veritas, the Catholic radio of the Archdiocese of Douala, about how his radio was preparing to cover the Pope's itinerary.
1 month before the Pope will come, we started a series of special programs in preparation for the arrival of the Pope, knowing fully well that our radio was the only Catholic radio that is listened to far and wide, that is all of the littoral province, part of the southwest province, and the western province too.
We had special programs. We invited people from other denominations apart from Catholics. In the first place, being Cameroonian, they were so enthusiastic knowing that the Pope is coming to Cameroon.
Nora Atta is another journalist with Radio Veritas.
A month before this papal visit, we started the special programs. Each day had a particular thing to talk about. We went down to the man on the street, we went to the youth, we went to the old, we went to the Protestants, we went to Muslims, we came back to the Catholic Church, the leaders of the church, and the laity to try to see how they are preparing the Pope's visit, how they welcome the idea in the first place, and all that we did in special programs in the radio, be it in the news, be it in other programs that we did in the radio. And so we did all that before being dispatched to Yaoundé to cover it live and give the feedback to those who are left in Douala. Those who could not make it to Yaoundé are expecting us to give them all what is happening minute by minute in Yaoundé.
As a Christian, as a Catholic, first of all, I really do expect that with the coming of the Pope, as a Christian, I first of all expect some spiritual cleansing for the country. And borrowing from a Cardinal Christian to me, who says, when the spiritual is fine, every other thing takes its place and everything will be fine. So that is the principal thing as a Christian, as a Catholic, I expect from the Pope's visit.
Would you like to tell us, to share with us, how young people have been preparing for this visit? What activities you have during and maybe after the visit?
Well, for activities before the visit and maybe during, the youth most often, as demanded by their various parishes in the various dioceses, and preparations mostly were spiritual prayers before the Pope will come, and praying too, because but the youth in Cameroon today look at their future as being very bleak, so their hopes are very, very high over the coming of the Pope. And just like I said a short while ago, the belief is that if the spiritual is okay, then they too can smile in future.
And you are coming from Douala, the first largest city, actually, it's like the commercial capital. How difficult has it been, you know, to get many delegates or many representatives from the various parishes around the country to Yaoundé?
In my opinion, I wouldn't say it has really been difficult. People were very enthusiastic about it. I must confess here that personally, I registered a Muslim who was willing to come to Yaoundé. So though being a Muslim, she showed every interest in coming to see the Pope too. So she asked me to register at one of the parishes. So I did that and got her ticket to the Ngefa.
And what are relations like, you know, between Christians and Muslims?
Relations between Christians and Muslims is really improving. Because since following the misunderstanding or the mishap that came up when the present Pope's message in relation to the Muslim was taken negatively, since after that, I'm sure with the reconciliation, the relation, I should say, is greatly improving. Like, I take the case of our radio. From time to time, when any of the Muslim feast come up, we invite them over to the radio, and they feel so honored to come there, and they are ready to talk at any time we call them over. They know it's a Catholic radio, but when the doors are open to them, they show up. And even before the Pope came in, one of our special editions we did, we also got to talk with the Muslims to find out their own opinion about it. And Cameroonians, first of all, being as they consider themselves privileged that the Pope has chosen for his first trip to Africa to make a stop first to Cameroon. So I think the ties are really closing up.
How do you hope to cover the trip beginning Tuesday?
As you can see already, we are here at the press center trying to make every arrangement necessary to see that we are also given a chance to cover, because fans of our radio are highly waiting to get information from us. Well, I should say we're prepared to cover the Pope's visit to its entirety, as far as we can go, I think.
And the Pope will not be meeting women in particular in Cameroon, but in Angola he will be meeting women, representing the women of Africa. What would you like the Pope to tell the women of Africa, and what would you like the women of Africa to tell Pope Benedict XVI?
I would like the Pope to tell the women of Africa to be a model of humanity, to take Mary as a model. Nowadays, all what the woman thinks is emancipation, and forgetting that role that Mary played as a modest and humble mother. I would like the Pope to teach the African woman to look back at Mary. She was not only showing up as the mother of Jesus, she was very humble, which is what the African woman should copy. The African woman is humble, yes, but nowadays with the globalization, we tend to copy mostly the negative from the Western world. That is what I think the Pope should tell the African woman. And the African woman should tell the Pope to pray for us. We just copy. At times we are being suppressed too much by the men folk. If the Pope can plead our cause in that light, I think it would be very good for the African woman.
Because, of course, the African woman, you know, occupies a very important place in society, you know, the breadwinner in most cases, you know. She goes to the farm to work, you know, she takes care of the home. What's your perspective on that?
I think the African woman occupies a very important place. Take the case of Cameroon. Most women in Cameroon, even if you are the office type, you go to the office, your husband expects to come back at the same time with you and meet his food on table. So the role of the African woman is very, very significant. Without the African woman, I think so much will go wrong in the world at large. Because even out of Africa, I've not been out of Africa, but I think out of Africa, most household chores are done by the African women. I think they have that gift of being mothers in the first place. In every aspect, the African woman takes the lead. Even among intellectuals, I mean, most of them are the African women. The papal visit, I expect a rekindlement of our faith. We should take advantage of this visit to look back at ourselves. The Pope coming to visit us is not because we are too good. They say Jesus came not for the upright, but for the sinners. Let's look back at ourselves. We are the sinners. I think the Cameroonian woman, the African woman in general, to look at themselves in that light and take advantage of this papal visit. It's not always that the Pope comes to a country. We are just lucky. I think it's God sent. It's actually God sent for us to look back at ourselves and reconcile with God.
Nora Atta is a journalist with Radio Veritas. We also heard from another of her colleagues, Jude Abanseka. And a warm thanks also to our correspondent in Yaoundé with Pope Benedict, Festus Tarawali. On his visit to Africa, Pope Benedict will be presenting to church leaders the working document, or Instrumentum Laboris, of the upcoming Special Assembly of the Synod of African Bishops to be held here in Rome in October this year. Cameroonian Father Sotene Bayemi Eseka says much progress has been achieved since the last African Synod back in 1994.
The church in Cameroon is trying to build up a new program for the social teaching of the church. It is true that for the time being, the social teaching is only taught in major seminaries and in the university. But then in Boya, Bamenda, Douala, Yaoundé, we are starting a new cycle with the formation of the laity. And then 2 or 3 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, the church published a booklet on how to fight against poverty, on how to create well-being up to 2015. And the church is also fighting corruption. We have new things that are really tackling life in Cameroon. Above all, abortion that is growing. We have less problem with the end of life, but with the starting life, I think we have much to do about it. What I can say is that it is a challenge for the church in Cameroon, the social teaching, not only to teach it, but also to apply it concretely. Above all, in Africa, in many countries, the church remains the only voice that can speak for the voiceless. The church is the only one that can say what is the truth about corruption, about the differences that exist in our society. This is why I think this synod is more complicated than the first one. The first one was more for the church itself. Now it is going towards the world. That's the church not only witnessing inside itself, but also trying to be, you know, a sacrament that can change the world. So it is a great challenge for the church.
Father Sotene Bayemi Eseka from Cameroon. And stay tuned to Vatican Radio for continuing coverage of Pope Benedict's 11th apostolic journey abroad to Cameroon and Angola. You'll find the very latest by clicking on the World News section of our website. That's vaticanradio.org. Just look for the English icon. It's known as the Lord's first miracle, when Jesus turned water into wine at the wedding feast of Cana. St. John recounts the story in his Gospel, telling how Mary and her son were invited to participate in a feast celebrating a newly married couple. When their hosts ran out of wine, Mary turned to Jesus, observing that there was no more to drink. At first, Jesus, who had yet to enter fully into public life, seemed reluctant to help out. But then he blessed the water, making it the finest wine to be served at the party. In a tradition dating at least as far back as the 8th century and perhaps even earlier, the wedding feast of Cana is generally held to have taken place in a small village in Galilee called Kephar Cana, about 5 miles northeast of Nazareth. A church was built over the site, and over the centuries, the Franciscans have built a larger church up around it. Recent excavations have revealed parts of the old church beneath it. Well, today, in part 3 of our series of Lenten reflections on holy sites in the land of Christ's birth, Father Peter Stravinskas takes us back to Cana for a look at that landmark event in Jesus' life. Father Stravinskas is a respected scholar, author, and is editor of the Catholic Response.
This is a key passage. This comes, of course, from St. John's Gospel, the second chapter, and it's the beginning of his Book of Signs. And John tells us that this was the first sign that Jesus worked. It's important to note, of course, that John refuses to use the word miracle in his gospel. And he's very selective. He said he only has six signs. And he uses the word sign, first of all, to avoid any connotations of magic, which might be associated with the word miracle. But more importantly, because a sign gives us information. And the sign points to the sign maker. And so when Jesus works this first sign, the transformation of the water into wine, this tells us not simply that he has the power to do it. As a matter of fact, some sleight-of-hand magicians could do perhaps the same thing. We know that from the miracles of Moses with the magicians in Egypt. What they did, he did back and forth. But this is something very, very different. And there's no stress on the magical in this at all. It's just that he says he does something and it happens, just the way the Holy Trinity at the beginning of time creates effortlessly. A word is spoken and something happens. Here, it's important to realize, of course, that this sign is worked at the behest of Our Lady. And John makes a comment which I think most people miss. John says there was a wedding, and Mary, the mother of Jesus, by the way, if you read only the Gospel of John, you'd never know Our Lady's name, because she's only referred to as the mother of Jesus, out of respect. But it says the mother of Jesus was invited, and so were Jesus and his disciples, which means she's the one that probably said, hey, my boy has a gang of friends, can they come too? But she's the one that's there as the real guest, and they seem to be tagging along. She goes to him, she initiates this, and says, they have no wine. And she doesn't press the case, she simply states the problem. And in that sense, gives us a model of how we ought to approach the Lord with our own requests. He knows what we need before we ask. And he gives an apparent refusal. My hour has not yet come. But good Jewish mother that she was, she simply went to the wine steward and said, do whatever he tells you. And she knows that he's not going to abandon her or this poor wedding couple to embarrassment. That line, do whatever he tells you, of course, is the only command given by Our Lady in the Gospels. And it's the best advice that could ever be given. Here, Catholics, for 20 centuries, have always seen the basis of Marian intercession. And it just seems to be as plain as the nose on your face that this is indeed the case. This would not have happened were it not for Our Lady's intercession on behalf of the newlyweds. This passage needs to be looked at in reference to another one. At the end of our Lord's public ministry, which is Calvary, the only two public appearances noted by John in his Gospel are Mary at Cana and Mary at Calvary. And this is the Hebraic literary principle known as inclusio, beginning and ending a literary unit with the same character or the same event. Mary initiates our Lord's public ministry, and she brings it to conclusion on Calvary, where she is given into the care of the beloved disciple. Son, behold your mother. Woman, behold your son. And we're told that from that hour on, John took her, the Greek expression is, into his own affairs, as some translations say, into his own home. What it really means is more than just a physical thing. He made her a part of his life. And then, to underscore what's really happening here, John ends with one line. He says, now, after all this was accomplished, Jesus gave over his spirit. In other words, the work of salvation would not have been complete if Jesus had not given us his mother to be our mother, to be the mother of the church, to be the mother of every Christian. And what John is also saying, I think it would be accurate to say, is that Mary at the beginning and Mary at the end means Mary throughout. These weren't guest appearances for the first and last show. This, as a matter of fact, is the undercurrent throughout. And so not to have the Blessed Virgin as a part of one's spirituality is to be lacking in a very, very serious dimension, and something that was so clearly intended by our Lord as to constitute a part of His last will and testament to us from the cross.
How are we supposed to react to miracles? Are we supposed to believe because a miracle has occurred?
We are, first of all, Jesus tells us repeatedly in the Gospels that we ought not to be looking for signs and wonders. In fact, he says it's an evil generation that looks for it. I've always maintained that when we find Christians constantly running after apparitions, Our Lady in a waterfall, Christ on a tree trunk, or God knows what.
On an old piece of bread or cheese sandwich.
These things are ludicrous. And I think the appropriate Christian attitude is a twofold response to the miraculous. One, it is indeed possible. Number two, it is highly improbable. And the church's attitude, whenever someone claims to have had an apparition or a miraculous cure, is always a very healthy Christian skepticism. We presume that the person is either a charlatan or a nut. And the burden of proof is on that individual to demonstrate that that fact did occur. And I think that the great fault of the 20th century was the absolute presumption that nothing miraculous could ever happen. We had all the answers. But the fault of perhaps the Middle Ages was the opposite, was that, it's popping up all over the place. And a miracle a minute. But Cardinal Newman makes the interesting observation that in the Old Testament, and this kind of flies in the face of what most people think, miracles are very sparse. And it's only prophets, for the most part, that are allowed to work miracles. Why? Because that gives credibility to their message. They're going to be making some very important demands on people, and people are going to have the right to say, who are you to say that? And what they do will give credibility to what they're saying. Newman then makes the point that in the New Testament, miracles are popping up all over the place to validate not only the message of Jesus, but his person. And in the Acts of the Apostles, we find, just as Jesus said in the Gospels, the things I do, you will do even greater. The apostles are working miracles all over the place. Why? Again, precisely to validate the message that they're giving. Miracles don't just occur in a vacuum. There's a reason for them. God acts for a purpose, not to dazzle us, to startle us, or even kind of grab our attention and force us to believe irrationally. But these are gifts of God given for a particular purpose.
Father Peter Stravinskas is founder of the Priestly Society of the Venerable Cardinal John Henry Newman and is editor of The Catholic Response. Well, that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. If you'd like to hear this and other programs on our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Again, thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.